Jason Alcoholic. Like I said, my home group is the Midtown Group in Bethesda, Maryland. And my sobriety date is September 26th of 1992. And I'm grateful to be here. Thank you, Billy, for asking me to come down. And I was telling some people before the meeting, I had to call my sponsor yesterday because my home group meets on Sunday nights. And I called him yesterday to let him know I'm not at home watching the Super Bowl. I will be in Madison, Virginia. If you don't see me at the meeting, I just want to make that clear, you know. And so now I have it on tape, too, so I have proof. I'm certainly grateful to be here, and I'm always glad to be asked to do something Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, as my grand sponsor says, you know, I hope I never think that I have a right to be here, and that it's a privilege to participate, you know. And so anyways, I also want to thank Andy and Paul for coming down with me. I sponsor Paul, and Andy's one of my brother pigeons, and glad they can make it. Paul actually came all the way down from Philly, and where he goes to school up there, and so definitely grateful to have that meeting before the meeting and on the car ride down here. And, you know, some of my best memories sober on those kinds of car rides, you know, and when you really get to know people in AA, you know, and spend some time with them. And I certainly, I've probably told my sponsor more in those kind of car rides than I have sitting out front of a meeting, you know, and you know, that time in the car, you know, is has been just great, you know. And certainly haven't always been a grateful member of AA. In fact, I didn't very much like AA when I got here, and I thought everybody looked the same, and I kind of fell into you know, the Midtown group when I first got sober. And and I had actually met a lot of people in that group prior to getting sober, because I drank with a guy whose sister was in the group, you know. And so I met a lot of these sober people, and I didn't like them very much, you know. And they just seemed really kind of boring, and they all, I really had this thing where I felt like everybody in AA dressed the same. You know, I always saw them in, like, collared shirts and khakis, and I wasn't really a collared shirt and khaki kind of guy, you know. And I certainly didn't have any, you know, a judgmental personality or anything. I just was observing, you know. And I remember my first weekend sober. You know, the same guy whose sister was in the group had, let me back up a little bit. The last time I drank, and I'll get a little bit more into my drinking history in a minute, but the last time I drank was at a school function. I was, I just started the junior year of my high school, and I was at a school dance, but I had no intentions of going in the dance. You know, I was just there to meet up with people to drink. And we went into the drainage sewer, like across the street from the high school, which was a kind of a favorite drinking spot of mine, you know. And you know, which seems a little abnormal now, you know, but it seemed perfectly logical at the time, a good place to hide. Had two exits on either side, you know, you know, you could run pretty easily from there if you got caught, you know. And so we're drinking in there, and I really have no recollection of anything that night except for holding a fifth in each hand, which, you know, if you drank like I did, that seemed like a really good night, you know. And blackout, you know. And what happened was, from what I've been told, I passed out in the soccer field of my high school, and my friends left me there because long before that they had gotten sick of taking me home, you know, because I was a blackout, pass out kind of drinker, you know. And you know, for a couple of years it's all right, you know, to do that to your friends, you know, they'll take you and put you to bed and all that, but after a while, it just kind of gets old hat, and they just leave you there, you know, and so they left me there, you know, figuring I would come to like I always did, and turned out it started to rain that night, and temperature dropped, and I'm still passed out in this field, and a couple other kids found me there and called an ambulance, because from what I obviously have no recollection of this, but they said I had turned blue, and they didn't think that was a good sign. So ambulance came and took me to Arlington Hospital, and turned out I was in an alcohol-induced coma. And you know, I came to sometime the next day, so it wasn't really a long coma, which later I thought, you know, well, it wasn't that bad, you know. And, I mean, I was only in a coma for a night, you know. You know, it's funny how time can change memories, you know. But I was pretty scared when I came to, you know. I just remember coming to, and all they still had heat lamps on me, and you know, I don't know, it was probably like 14, 15 hours later. And so it was really bright, and then all of a sudden I saw silhouettes of people, you know, and then I could make out that it was, you know, my mom, my dad, my brother, and my uncle, who happened to be visiting from England, and, you know, just making friends, you know, and I just noticed they had some sort of black residue all over them, and I found out later that was the charcoal they had put in my stomach earlier that night. And they just had this look of, you know, and it really wasn't disappointment, it was just fear, you know. And my parents honestly did not know I really drank up until that point. You know, I had drank for 6 years, you know, and I had really strict rules for how not to get caught, you know. I would rather get in trouble for not coming home at all than coming home drunk. You know, my mom had been sober in AA for a few years at this point, so I knew that if I got caught drinking, game over, you know. And so I, you know, I led very much a double life, you know, and I still did well in school all through my drinking, you know, only because I knew it would allow me to continue to drink, you know. And and I was actually the guy, because I pretty much sought lower companions my entire drinking, you know. And I was the guy that if you were one of my drinking buddies, your parents wanted you to hang out with me. You know, they thought I was a good influence. What they didn't know is I was the guy who, the moment you got out of rehab, was calling you up and asking you to come celebrate, you know. And but anyway, so a few days after this coma, you know, I was in bed sick. I got suspended from school because they don't like it when you do that, you go into a coma on school premises, you know. And and I somehow evaded getting expelled. It was a big argument about that. And my friend, whose sister was in the program, called me up. And he said, I heard about what happened. And that happened on a Friday night. This was a Tuesday. And said he had been sober for 2 months, and asked me if I wanted to go to a meeting, you know. And I said, all right, you know. And 2 days earlier from that, my mom had asked me if I wanted to go to a meeting. In fact, she tells me now that she didn't really ask me. She kind of more told me, and I told her I wasn't going to go. And but just within a couple days, I started to recover a little bit physically. You know, I felt like I could get out of bed at this point, you know, and I was pretty sick after that experience, you know. And but I was starting to, you know, on the upswing of that, and I was already thinking about, you know, how can I get out of the house to go drink, you know. And that scared me enough that when he called me, I was willing to accept that help, you know, and really by seconds and inches, you know. And so he told me there was a meeting he was going to that was about 3 or 4 blocks from my house that night, you know. And I thought that was a little drastic, you know. I didn't want to really jump into this thing, you know. And so I made plans to meet him that Friday, you know. And I think that Friday I was still suspended, so I met up with him after school and kind of went over to his house, and this guy, Chris, came and picked us up, took us to the meeting. And then that night, my soon-to-be sponsor took me home, and he did exactly what it says in the 12 step in the big book. You know, he told me parts of his story, you know, and pretty much my only response was like, uh-huh, kind of at the appropriate time, because I wasn't really paying attention. You know, I was more staring out the window and thinking, why am I in a car with an old guy? You know, like, what is going on here? And he was younger then than I am now, and so I understand, you know, when I'm probably giving that 16-year-old a ride home, you know, they're probably thinking, what's up with this old guy, you know? But anyways, the next day, only thing I remember from that car ride is he said when I was about to get out of the car, you know, he pulled in my parents' driveway, he said, what are you doing tomorrow, you know? And I had no idea how important that was, you know, because I really had nothing going on. My parents were not going to let me out of the house unless I was going to AA meeting. So I said, nothing, you know. And he said, well, I'll pick you up. And he took me to this daytime meeting in Georgetown. And then we all kind of, this is where I really started to dislike AA. We all went down to the waterfront in Georgetown. And it was me and him and two or three other guys. Like I said, they were all wearing khakis and collared shirts. And I felt like I'm in hell, you know. And I felt like I was trapped in a Dockers commercial, you know. And here I'm not dressed like they are, you know. I look nothing like them, you know. And so I really had that idea of, you know, I certainly judge people by their outsides, you know, and I look for any reason to distance myself from people in AA, you know, and but at the same time, I had nowhere else to go, you know. I tried to quit drinking many times on my own, you know. When you have, my experience was, you know, I had a mom who was sober, went back out and got sober again, was sober a few years by the time I got sober. And when you were familiar with AA and you're drinking, you know, and it's right there in your face, you know, you question your drinking, you know. I question my drinking all the time. So I was always trying to stop or moderate or, you know, just thinking, why did I do this again, you know, and convincing myself in the morning that I'm not going to do this again today, you know, and it's going to be different. And then I would do it again. And 6 o'clock, I'd find myself drinking and I would have no idea what happened. And I would just say, well, I'm a smart guy. I just changed my mind, you know. And I was always changing my mind, you know. And it didn't always start out that way, you know. And I was leading a meeting earlier this week on the first step. And I hear a lot of young people come into AA and say, you know, I was an alcoholic from the very first drink I took. And I don't know if that's necessarily true for me. I certainly had alcoholic tendencies. But I don't know if I had gotten to the point in the big book, right off the bat, where it talks about the real alcoholic, you know, because for the first couple years of my drinking, you know, I could stop or moderate just fine, you know, and it really was kind of a take it or leave it kind of thing. And not to say I didn't like drinking, because I did, you know, I did it as often as I could, you know, but when you're 10 years old, it's not that often, you know, and it was more of like a big thrill rush of, you know, getting a mason jar from the cabinet, going to the liquor cabinet, pouring a little bit of everything in there, you know, mixing vodka with vermouth and, you know, just horrible taste, you know, and kind of sneaking off into those sewer drains or the woods and holding your nose and, you know, and putting it back and smoking cigarettes and doing all kinds of things you weren't supposed to be doing at the age of 10, you know. That's what attracted me to it. You know, I was always secretly attracted to things I wasn't supposed to be doing, you know. And like I said, on the outside, you wouldn't, you know, most people would have never guessed that. Because I was the guy, you know, got straight A's, you know, people considered to be a smart kid. I think maybe at one time that was true, but I probably did enough damage to myself that I'm probably just more average now, you know, but I just love drinking. But like I said, you know, if alcohol was part of the plan and it fell through, it was like no big deal. You know, we'd go play basketball or, you know, play video games or something, and you know, it just wasn't an issue, you know. But later on in my drinking, if alcohol was part of the plan and it fell through, I was tearing apart the spice cabinet, trying to find something to smoke, or, you know, drinking vanilla extract or whatever I could get my hands on, you know, and anything to alter my mood, you know. And there was a point in time, you know, at some point in my drinking, and for me it happened pretty early. It only took a couple of years to make that jump, you know. But there certainly is a distinct difference, you know, from the very early drinking I did to sometime later in my drinking, you know. And I just wasn't interested in doing anything that didn't involve drinking, you know. And I started to sacrifice things that seemed to be important to me at one time in my life, you know. And I was always really close to my brother growing up, and at the beginning of my drinking, we drank together all the time, you know, and then at one point, he just stopped, you know, and all together for like a couple of years. Probably, you know, for the heaviest years of my drinking, he wasn't drinking at all, you know, and so we were just, you know, doing different things, and I wanted nothing to do with him, you know. And, you know, I always, you know, heavily involved playing tennis and swimming when I was growing up. And I just stopped. You know, it just didn't seem worth it to get up early on a summer morning, you know, at 6 o'clock in the morning, go to the pool and practice. You know, I just, I was no longer interested, you know, because I was too hungover most of the time, you know. And, you know, and like I said, I had all these rules. So even though I was already starting to question my drinking, I just really never got in trouble, you know. And, my parents probably should have had some clues, but, you know, I guess, you know, I don't know what it's like to be a parent, but I'm sure it's hard to admit some of that stuff. But I would get taken home by the police every once in a while, you know, and they thought I was just out, you know, with my buddies, you know, I guess probably just smoking cigarettes, you know, because they knew I smoked, but they didn't know I drank. You know, but I would always somehow manage to dish alcohol before I got caught, or, you know, I never, like I said, I had these rules. I never brought any alcohol or any other substances or paraphernalia or anything into my parents' house. I had a vast supply of woods across the street, you know, to hide things in, you know, and I just didn't see, like, people who got caught, I just thought, you're just not very smart, you know. And because my friends were getting caught all the time, you know. And part of that was because I took advantage of their homes, you know, to hide things in. You know, I was always drinking at their house and not at mine, you know. And everybody would be like, why don't we go to your parents? And I'd be like, nope, you know. You know, I just, you know. I was very rigid about these things, you know, and I snuck out from my parents' house all the time, you know, and they started to catch on. Like I said, I started getting taken home by the police, and at first, I was vandalizing and stuff and drinking and doing things that, you know, I guess some teenagers do, you know. And I would get caught out on the street, you know, just doing stupid stuff, breaking into cars, stealing change and cigarettes so we can get some more beer, you know, and never really any serious crime, you know, just stupid stuff. And I would usually get stopped by the cops, and I was probably 13, 14, 15 years old at the time. But I always looked a lot younger than I was, you know, and I could pretty much cry on demand. You know, so I would just start crying to the police officer, and they'd be like, you know, there's somebody out here breaking into cars. It's not safe. You should go home. you know, and but it was me that was breaking into the cars, you know. And so they would usually, like at the beginning when I started getting caught, they would just send me home, you know. And then they started to see me over and over again, you know, and they started to take me home. And then they started to knock on the door, you know, and wake up my parents. And a few times after that happened, my parents nailed my window shut, you know, so I couldn't get out. And I just went out a different window, you know. It just seemed like, you know, add to the challenge. And it was, I mean, it was so ridiculous because, you know, I had to get out. You know, I had to go out and drink, you know. It was not an option of staying in, you know. And I lived in the basement of my parents' house. There was only two windows down there that opened anyway, so they just nailed both of those shut. And then, and if you walked up the stairs, it was a back door, like right there, but that just seemed too easy, you know. So I would actually walk past the door, through the kitchen, through the dining room, right next to their room, upstairs and out the window. And then I would climb on top of the porch, you know, and then swing around, slide down the railing, you know, and make a run for it, you know. And part of it was I liked the challenge, you know. I enjoyed that, you know. So I was out and about and doing the same thing again, you know, and just trying to be a little bit more careful, you know. So I stopped, you know, vandalizing and breaking in cars, you know, and just kept a lower profile, you know, and didn't get caught very much. And, you know, things would happen, you know. Would be so drunk, you know, carrying a bottle on the street and fall over and break it on my hand, have explained to my parents why I cut my hand open, you know, dumb stuff like that, you know. Or, you know, I remember one time, and my parents live in an okay neighborhood. It's not the greatest neighborhood in the world, but, you know, it's pretty family-oriented. It kind of is scattered around outside of it with some shadier areas, you know. You know, and I've never seen a gun in my parents' neighborhood when I'm not drinking, you know. But it seemed like stuff like, you know, guns came out, you know, late at night when I was out, you know. And so one time, you know, me and my friends are, you know, our only form of transportation is bicycles because we're like 14 or 15, you know. And we're biking along drunk, real drunk. And I fell over on my bike and passed out. And so my friends are just kind of sitting on the curb smoking cigarettes, waiting for me to come to, and I come to, and this guy standing over me, holding up his shirt, showing me his gun, you know, wanting my bicycle. And I'm sure if I was sober, I probably would have just given the guy my bicycle. But of course, you know, I've got a little bit in me, you know, and have a little bit of that false courage, you know, and I tell him, you know, is it really my bicycle you want, or do you want a mode of transportation, you know? And the guy's like, I'm just trying to get somewhere, man. And I'm like, so you don't really want my bicycle? And he's like, give me your bike. And I said, well, wouldn't it be easier if you just got on the back of my bike and I stood and pedaled, you know, and got you where you needed to go, you know, and that way we both win, you know? And the guy's like, he's like, all right, you know? And so here I am, you know, with this probably drug dealer on the back of my bicycle, you know, and he's trying to get to Green Valley in Arlington, which is not a very nice neighborhood. And we're biking along. And it's not just me with a guy on the back of my bike. There was three of them and three of us, you know. And so everybody's got one, a guy on the back of their bike, you know. And we're biking down the street, you know. And one of the guys, his pager goes off, and he's like, I got to find a phone. And I'm like, right there. So they all get off the bikes, go to the phone. We just take off, you know. And things like that were happening, you know, that just... things like that don't happen when you're sober, you know. And I you know, anybody in their right mind would have just given up their, you know, couple hundred dollar bicycle, you know. But I just, you know, I did stupid stuff when I was drinking. I would get in fights, you know. And I'm not a big guy now, but I was when I got sober, I was 5'4" and shy of 100 pounds, you know. So I was I was getting in a lot of fights, but I wasn't winning a whole lot, you know. And it was usually about one punch, and I was going down, and perhaps getting knocked out, you know. And so, but I had a big mouth when I was drinking, you know, and would say stuff because I was normally a really quiet guy, you know, and introverted, and but when I would get some alcohol on me, I would talk, you know, and I would talk stuff I probably shouldn't be talking, you know, and so I'd get in fights, and sometimes the only reason I ever won is because I had a friend who was bigger than me, you know, and it wasn't me winning the fight, you know, but sometimes I would just get left alone, you know, and that wasn't good, you know, so just dumb stuff like that, you know, but more than anything, you know, because I always drank, and I hear a lot of people in AA talk about this. You know, I drank because I just felt a little bit different, a little bit off my whole life. You know, I just felt stressed out, you know. Like, I had no reason to be stressed out as a kid, you know. I grew up in, a good family. You know, I said my mom went to AA, but I really never saw her drink. You know, she was, I don't know exactly. She was definitely a maintenance drinker because she wouldn't drink all day until she put me to bed, and then she would drink a lot, you know. And so I never really saw her drink, you know, maybe a couple times, you know. I certainly never seen her drunk, you know. So I was given everything I could possibly want growing up, you know. Both my parents are first generation Americans, and you know, worked hard, you know, so their, children wouldn't have to, you know, have some of the hardships they've had, you know, and really gave me everything I could need, you know, and just good people, you know, and I had no reason, you know, to feel that way, you know, but I just always did, you know, just always seemed filled with fear and anxiety, you know, and when I drank, you know, all that went away, you know, and even though drinking was causing me problems, it seemed worth it, you know. And if it did for you what it did for me, you know, you'd drink too, you know. And the problem with that is, you know, the longer I drank, the relief got shorter, you know, and the pain in between a drink got more intense, you know, and it just seemed like I was drinking just to get by, you know, and so by the time I'm 15 years old, you know, where it become, you know, maybe a few times a week, definitely on weekends, you know, and maybe doing some other stuff during the week, you know, which I don't really talk about in AA meetings, but I certainly had my experience with other substances, and I became a daily drinker at the age of 15, you know, and my normal routine was that my parents gave me $2 a day for lunch at the school cafeteria, you know, and I would take that $2 and I would somehow come up with an extra 35 cents, and because you could go to the corner store not far from my school, about 2-3 blocks. And if you could put money on the counter, they would serve you, you know. And me and another friend, every day, we would go during our lunch break and get $2.35 would buy you a six-pack of King Cobra malt liquor, which is the cheapest thing they had, you know. And it was just horrible, you know. And sometimes not even refrigerated, you know. And we would take that to the same drainage pipe that I later... drank myself into a coma, you know, we would drink in there and we put those away real quick. And that was really just to get me by during the day, you know, and then I'd usually do something else after school. And, you know, that was like right after lunch, I would go to French class, you know, which is probably why I don't speak French, and I took 4 years of it, you know, and I just don't really remember French class very well, you know, and like I said, you know, after school I would probably get into something else if it didn't involve more drinking, and then on weekends I'd really party, you know, and uh, and it would just get me by through the week, you know. And then kind of the summer between my sophomore and my junior year of high school is complete fog to me, you know. It was just all bets off, partying every day, all day, you know. And I the only thing I remember about that summer is, you know, my parents said that they wanted to instill some sort of work ethic in me. I'm not quite sure why, but they said, you know, we're no longer going to give you allowance unless you volunteer at this homeless shelter, you know. And so I would volunteer at this homeless shelter, and I would do it from, like, I don't know, I think it was like 10 to 1 every day, you know, during that summer. And so I would go in there, and kind of my only job there was to kind of talk to the guys living there, and we would usually get on the subject of drinking, you know, because most of them were in there for, you know, because they couldn't stop drinking, and they would kind of stay there for a little while till they could get in the treatment center or detox or something like that, and or they'd just gotten out of one and were staying there to get back on their feet, you know. And I would tell them a little bit about my drinking escapades, and here I am, you know, volunteering, you know, at this homeless shelter, and these guys are telling me how much of an alcoholic I am, you know, from hearing my little stories, you know. And I'm thinking, you know, what are you talking about? You live on the street. I have a home, you know. And really, the sick thing is, you know, I probably only had a home because I was 16 and my parents took care of me, you know. Well before that even, I was already, you know, like I said, I wasn't okay when things didn't involve, not, you know, no alcohol. And when my friends couldn't get a hold of it, I would go down to the park and I would go under the bridge and I would drink with those guys, you know. And I've been doing that for at least a year by this point, you know. And you know, you buy them a round of beer, they'll go buy you more, you know. And I would spend many a day down that park, you know, just sitting under the bridge and drinking and learning life skills like how to roll your own cigarettes, you know. And I actually enjoyed it. I thought, you know, I was pretty out there, you know. I would have those thoughts like, these guys have it made, you know, they can drink all the time and nobody's bothering them, you know, and really not thinking about the fact that they got nowhere to go that night and I'm going home, you know. And so I'm drinking and telling my stories to these guys, and then I'm going right from there to meet up with my friends, who I was the only guy that I hung out with who was not in summer school, so it was kind of good. I had those mornings there because then I would meet up with these guys after they got out of summer school, and we would go off and party, you know. And that kind of led into my junior year of high school. And like I said, I always thought I was a smart guy, and I always had dreams about going to college and doing all those kinds of things, you know, that my parents wanted for me. And I knew going into my junior year I wasn't going to make it, you know. There was no way I could make it living that double life another 2 years, you know. There's just no way. You know, too many times I slipped up, gotten caught, you know, or near miss, you know. Things like, you know, I had a friend who whose father was a major alcoholic, you know, and he lived with his father because his mom was even worse off, like institutionalized mental problems. And this was one of my lower companions. He drank like I did, you know, and his father was had been fired and they'd gotten their phone cut off. So it was always a good excuse to say I was staying at Bryce's house because there was no way to reach me if I was there, if I was really going out to a party or something. You know, so I told my parents, you know, I'm going to spend the night at Bryce's house. And I went to this party. And problem is, Bryce called me because I neglected to tell him that I was staying at his house, you know, even though I wasn't. But I didn't want to tell him because I didn't want him going to this party with me. You know, good friend. And And so I go to this party, and my parents are worried sick all night, you know, wondering where I am, calling around, and, you know, it was certainly a party of a guy I didn't even really know all that well, so I have no idea, there was many nights, you know, where I just didn't come home or didn't show up, and sure, they were worried sick, and but this one particular night, you know, I passed out at this party, and they poured beer all over me. You know, and I wake up in the morning, or I come to, and the guy's kicking me. He said, "Dude, your mom's on the phone," you know. And I have no idea how she got that phone number to this day, you know. And I didn't even know the guy's phone number. So I'm like, yeah. She's trying to get me to give her the address. And I'm like, no way. I'll meet you at my high school, you know, which wasn't that far away, you know. And because I didn't want to be the guy that got everybody in trouble, you know. And so she finally agreed to meet me at the high school, and I'm like, dude, can I borrow some clothes? Can I shower? And he's like, no way, you know. And finally agreed to let him hose me off in the backyard, and you know, so it wouldn't completely reek of alcohol, you know. And I tell my mom, you know, I was just at this party, I wasn't drinking, but people poured beer on me while I was sleeping, you know. It somehow, you know, narrowly escaped, you know, a direct hit, you know, and I have no idea why she bought it, you know, but she did. And so I was having all kinds of stuff like that, and just knew, you know, stubble life wasn't going to hold up, you know, and so I really told myself that, you know, I'm not going to drink during the week. You know, my last few years of high school, I'm only going to party on the weekends, you know, and I really thought I could do it, you know, even though I had much experience to tell me that I couldn't, you know. And and about 3 days in my junior year of high school, you know, somebody asked me, it was a Wednesday, and asked me to go, you know, out into the woods and drink, and I did, you know. And it just took once asking, you know, and I was right off. And like I said, 3 weeks into that year, I went into that coma, and I ended up in AA, you know. And you know, I'm certainly grateful that even though I didn't have the best attitude about AA when I first got to it, you know, I stuck around more because I had nowhere else to go. Like I said, you know, I just had nowhere else to go. And my first meetings, you know, I really had a hard time listening to people, you know. And like I said, it was just so judgmental, and I felt like everybody dressed the same, and people did what they were told, and I always had an issue with, I was very anti-authority, you know. And, you know, I just felt like, you know, people in AA are sheep, you know, and they just do what, you know, everybody else does. And, you know, I just had all these old ideas, you know. And so I would try to listen, but everybody kind of, I don't know if you ever watched Charlie Brown comic, you know, the on TV, and, you know, Charlie Brown's parents kind of, like, make that wah-wah, wah-wah sound, and that's kind of what I heard in meetings for my first few weeks, you know. And but over time, you know, people just kept me busy, you know, kept picking me up for meetings, and I wouldn't really express my displeasure with AA, you know, but I'm sure they could tell, you know. And but I wouldn't say it verbally, you know. It wasn't until later I said it verbally, you know. And when I got a little bit more comfortable around some people in AA, you know. And so I'd go to the meetings, and eventually, you know, I started to hear things that, you know, these people were really talking about, you know, the same kind of stuff I had experienced my whole life, you know. And that same kind of loneliness that I had, you know, especially towards my end of my drinking. And those nights when I, you know, might happen to be sober and I would lay awake thinking about all the rotten things I had done to people and all the times I let my parents down and thinking it would be different, you know, and then I'd be doing the same thing the next day, you know. And and people, you know, said these things in meetings, and eventually, you know, my ears opened up, you know, and I, you know, took a little bit of a hold of this thing, you know. And and within the first couple weeks I was sober, I asked that guy that gave me a ride home for my first meet to be my sponsor, you know. And You know, and I was scared of him. I was so scared of him, you know. And it's funny now because he's significantly shorter than me. And but at the time, he was taller than me, and he was kind of big and husky, you know. And I just was, I mean, I was, he wasn't like, you know, he was big, you know. And I thought, you know, he could easily move me around, you know. And so it's not that he would, he just terrified me, you know. And every time he told me the truth about anything, it just felt like he was screaming at me. You know, when he was probably talking as normal as I'm talking now, you know. But I just was not used to people telling me, you know, how I was, you know. And because I would do things like, you know, I was just, I was that newcomer that would show up to the diner, order food, and then tell you I didn't have money, you know. And he would express his displeasure with having to pay for me every time, you know. The first few times, he kind of let it go, you know. But after a while, you know, he was like, all right, man, if you're not gonna have money, at least tell me before you order. You know, give me that courtesy, you know. But he kept bringing me around to meetings and introducing me to his friends. When he would do something in AA, I would just go with him, you know. And he had a Friday night coffee position at this meeting we went to, you know, it became my Friday night coffee position. You know, I just did it with him, you know. And he really, more than telling me what to do, he showed me how he lived, you know. And I really appreciate that, you know, because I certainly have never done well with being told what to do, you know. But if I see somebody doing it, you know, I'm much more willing to go along, you know. And, you know, and he built up my trust, you know, to where, you know, I really have that trust that, you know, he won't steer me wrong, you know. And he only wants the best for me, you know. And he certainly wants more for me than I do for myself a lot of the time, you know, because I will you know, certainly settle for, you know, eighth best, really, not even second best, you know. And he really tries to push me beyond that and out of my comfort zone and get me to, you know, talking to people. You know, like I said, I've always been kind of an introverted person, you know, and he would push me, you know, to make friends here and then eventually, you know, to reach my hand out to the new guy, you know. And I certainly, you know, I definitely became involved in the fellowship and I got through the first five steps, you know, within my first 9 months of sobriety, you know, but I wasn't really truly sold on AA, you know, not really. And I didn't know that until much later, you know, until I knew the difference, you know, but it wasn't until I had a few years sober, you know, and these seven other guys were, it was 1995, and Icky Paul was in Hawaii that year, and these seven other guys from my group were all going out there, and they were kind of like, you know, well, let's go for a month, and then let's go for a couple months, and then it ended up being like 3.5 months they went for, and I went with them, you know, and I was terrified of these. I have no idea why I went, you know, because I was... These were the guys that, you know, were really doing the deal in AA, and I was not really hanging out with them too much, you know, and I moved in with these guys, and they would, you know, I really learned what they were doing, you know, 24/7, you know, we were living together. I saw every night them pull out their inventory books and take written inventory and sit quietly in the morning and reach your hand out to a newcomer and get some service positions as soon as we got there. And I tell you, the first month and a half I was there, I was miserable, you know. And I just felt on the outside looking in. I didn't know their inside jokes, you know. And we had one car between the eight of us, so if eight people couldn't agree to do something, you weren't doing it. So you weren't getting your way very often, you know. And it was just painful to me, you know. And I did not bring enough money for this full trip, you know, and I ran out of money really quickly, and I wasn't telling anybody what was going on, you know, and a guy there, you know, who later became one of my best friends, you know, would wake me up and be like, you need to go find a job, you know, we don't want to see you at the dinner table unless you have a job, you know, because I was out of money and I was not, you know, contributing at this point. And I eventually got this job, and it wasn't really so much that I got the job or I, you know, more that I was, you know, contributing for myself, but I just kind of surrendered a little bit, you know, a little bit more, you know, and over the different periods of my sobriety, I've just had to surrender a little bit more. And I think, for me, that was the most, besides, you know, getting sober, admitting I was an alcoholic, that was, to me, the biggest other surrender was I took a little bit of the shift from being a taker to a giver, you know, and, you know, it took me a few years, like I said, you know, and I ended up, up until recently, that same guy, I lived with him for 10 years, you know, and I just recently moved out of his house and with my girlfriend, you know, you know, I just, you know, really developed some really close friendships in AA, you know, and with a lot of people I respect, you know, and you know, again, I started moving along with the steps, you know, because I had stalled for a few years, you know. And there's been several times where I've stalled like that, you know, and I've gotten off the beam, and it's, you know, and I think Clancy talks about it, where it's like, you know, this is the line, and you just get a little bit off, and over a period of time, the distance between you and where you should be, you know, even if it was just a little bit at the beginning, becomes this huge distance, you know, and thank God I've had people that are willing, you know, to tell me the truth, you know, and tell me, you know, dude, you got to, you know, get back on it, you know, and are willing to, you know, push me back in that direction, you know, even if I don't want to hear it, you know. And that same guy I was roommates with, I can't tell you how many times when we were living together, I would take the metro to work in the morning, and he would usually do the same at that time. And he'd be like, you know, at night, right before bed, he'd be like, we're walking the metro together tomorrow. And that usually meant I was going to get an earful, you know, about something I was doing, you know. But I, you know, I'm certainly grateful, you know. And it's not like anything malicious. It was just, you know, this is the deal, you know. This is what we're doing. We're over here doing this, you know. And getting a little bit off the beam, you know, because I can get a little bit off the beam and all of a sudden, you know, just seems like I get these thoughts like, and it's never, you know, I hardly ever get the thought, you know, and I get them every once in a while. More often than getting a drinking thought, what I get is I've heard everything they have to say. You know, I've heard those people share 100 times, you know, they're not going to say anything different tonight, you know. And then it starts off with that one person is talking about me behind my back, you know. All of a sudden, you know, it's their friends too, and their friends' friends. And then all of a sudden, it's everybody in the meeting's got something out for me, you know. And I have a tendency to be a little self-centered, just a little bit paranoid, you know. I just have to, I usually get nudged back, and I, you know, just get a little dose of reality, you know, certainly, you know, making the amends was another huge step for me in sobriety, you know, sitting down with both my parents, you know, and making those amends, And then, you know, creating further damage sober. You know, I've gotten myself in a huge financial hole, you know, and had to ask my dad to bail me out at one point, you know, and like 7 years sober, you know, and just feeling like a big winner, you know. I tell you what, though, more so than, you know, making formal amends to my dad, and when I paid him the last bit of money I owed him, you know, I think that was, you know, something, you know, it meant more to him than just, you know, words, you know, and I certainly grateful, because it wasn't my idea, you know, and it certainly wasn't my idea. So I'm certainly grateful for Alcoholics Anonymous. Everything it's done for me. Vladimir. Thanks.